Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Brainwaves, hear the world differently. Bringing community mental health to you, raising awareness and challenging stigma. Tune in to 3CR Community Radio, Wednesdays at 5pm.
Melbourne's Drive Time Radio program, featuring community organisations, powerful stories and information. Find us at brainwaves.org.au. Proudly sponsored by Wellways Australia.
I would like to begin by paying my respects to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which I am coming to you from today. Land where at Brainwaves we tell our stories, and land where the traditional custodians have told their stories for many, many years before us, and continue to tell their stories. I would like to pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners who are listening today.
Just a bit of a content warning for today's show. We'll be discussing suicide, suicidal ideation, sexual assault and abuse. So if that type of discussion might not be good for you today, it might be worth tuning out for the next half an hour. Hello, my name's Mark, and welcome to Brainwaves on 3CR 855am, 3CR Digital Radio and 3CR.org.au. Regular listeners might remember a few weeks ago I interviewed artist Amelia McSherry about their upcoming exhibition and the endurance piece accompanying it, I Want to Die, But Not at the Hands of a Man. Well, Amelia was kind enough to share an invite to the exhibition with Brainwaves, so I went along to experience the art we discussed during the interview. For our listeners who didn't have a chance to hear the original interview, you can find a podcast version of the show on the Brainwaves section of the 3CR website. The exhibition took place in a gallery inside of one of Thornbury's many eclectic storefronts and comprised several pieces, including a series of cyanotypes. I wasn't familiar with cyanotype photography before the exhibition, but I've since learned it's a photographic process where a piece of paper is coated in an ultraviolet sensitive solution and a photographic negative or object such as leaves, flowers, or really anything you like are placed on the paper. When the paper is exposed to ultraviolet light, an imprint of the image or object is transferred onto the paper. The finished result is a blue and white photograph. Compared to photographs produced in a lab, cyanotypes have a raw charm about them. To me, they look like sky blue silhouettes floating in milk. Amelia's photographic subjects include a peaceful private onsen, animal bones, and religious iconography. In one photo, there appear to be shards of broken pottery or shells arranged at the edges of the frame, where the picture seems to sink into the milky white background. The effect softens the ruffles and rivulets, lending them the appearance of something delicate in bloom. There were handmade candle holders, sculpted from stoneware clay. They were hardy objects with the appearance of something hewn from solid stone. They were placed on something altar-like, which, in the context of the exhibition, gave them the impression of being funerary or votive in nature. Continuing the religious motifs the gallery had to offer, there was a piece Amelia called Prayer Board, where they arranged a number of items such as crochet doilies, smooth animal bones, images of various saints, and a long strand of dark braided hair. I believe the hair once belonged to the artist. On a piece entitled Things I Can't Let Go Of, there are rows upon rows of small Ziploc bags. Every bag holds some sort of trinket or keepsake. One bag is filled with shards of glass, while another contains a solid white rosary. Other Ziploc bags contain pills, galvanized steel nails, matchbooks, a hospital tag, a retainer, court documents, and lace. One Ziploc bag is filled with what appears to be sand. All the little items in their Ziploc bags were suggestive of evidence gathered at a crime scene. And like evidence gathered at the scene of a crime, together they tell the story of a past transgression. But they also tell the story of what happened between, before, and after the transgression took place. There's more to Amelia and other victim survivors than the violence that was done to them, and the period of time when the violence occurred. But they are the ones often left to carry the burden of shame. Which reminds me of something one of the guests I interviewed at the exhibition said about her experience of the art.
The way she's done it in such a courageous way has kind of esteemed survivors of abuse in a way that makes them esteemed, respectful people, and the shame needs to be shifted to the perpetrators. And I feel like that's almost what this has done for me.
The centrepiece of the exhibition is the endurance performance Amelia described during our last interview. At the centre of the gallery, they lay within a glass box adorned with elegant white lace and satin. They remained in the box for the duration of the entire exhibition. Amelia was mostly bare. Their long, unruly hair did most of the work covering their naked flesh. Atop the box where they lay, as if sprouting from the earth, is a smattering of shrubs, plants, and other greenery. At first glance, I assumed they were artificial, but upon approaching, I inhaled a particularly earthy aroma, which led me to believe otherwise. While not a coffin or casket, the glass enclosure the artist lay within was highly suggestive of one. Supposedly, nowadays, one can eschew the traditional mahogany, oak or cedar casket for a clear casket made out of glass or acrylic. A clear casket allows the departed to be viewed one last time before their loved ones say their goodbyes. In 1859, an inventor patented a glass coffin in which the deceased, once embalmed, would be sealed inside. The coffin then had all the air removed, hermetically sealing the departed within. The inventor of this coffin believed the body could be preserved for centuries in this manner. In an interview at the time, he claimed that the flesh of the subject will preserve its natural tints so that relatives and friends will be able to view the deceased for years to come. This inventor even envisioned an expansive system of vaults where families could store their deceased loved ones. Each coffin would have a catalogue number that could be quoted to an attendant, who would then fetch the coffin and its occupant to an elegant viewing room where it could be seen. And that is where we all viewed Amelia, in an elegant little space they created, with them inside their burial vessel at the centre of the room, on display for all the guests of the gallery. At the turn of the century, another supposed advantage of being laid to rest in a glass coffin was that if the glass fogged up, one could determine the person had been put to rest prematurely. I didn't feel confident approaching too closely to check for Amelia's breath fogging up the glass. Despite the setting, what they were doing in there seemed private. But another attendee of the exhibition had a very different response to seeing Amelia in their glass box.
Yeah. I also felt like I really wanted to give her a hug.
Same.
Like it felt, it almost felt like it just like hurt so much where I was like, there's this like glass wall separating us.
Yes. I wanted to just write a letter and slip it into the glass to her. I kept going up to the glass and trying to touch the side of it just to be like, I'm here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The last item on display was Amelia's journal from the years 2023 to 2026, which comprised the years before, during, and after they were in a relationship with their abuser. I didn't have the opportunity to read a single page because there wasn't a moment during the entire evening when an attendee wasn't standing over the lectern or lining up to explore the contents of the book. But this is what some of the attendees had to say about what they read and how they felt about reading Amelia's journal with Amelia only feet away.
Yeah, I think the journal was really raw. It was quite full on. Obviously, it's full on for her to present a journal because it's usually just kept for someone's personal use. And I think that having that is like very, it feels intrusive to read, but it's also really powerful to like open up that part of your life to other people. It's a weird thing, but I think because she wasn't interacting with the crowd, it felt like I could kind of consume it in my own kind of way without feeling like she was watching me consume her work. But yeah, it was a weird thing to read while the person that's like put all of this writing and all these emotions into this work is like just next to you.
I did think at sometimes she was right next to me. It was quite moving, definitely, I would say. And I think a lot of the time our darkest thoughts sometimes feel too embarrassing to share, so I thought it was quite vulnerable for her to put that out there, at least for my personal thoughts. If I was to share some of my darkest thoughts, I would feel so much shame. So it's really moving to have her lay it out in front of you and just to touch and open and read through it. Yeah, I thought.
It's such a crazy thing to read someone's diary. It's very personal, very like exposing, and I think naturally people are curious to know more and to know who it's about. And I think everyone just has a different response to it and probably projects their own experiences onto it as well, which I think is very cool and the cool thing about making it into art.
If you're just joining us on Brainwaves this evening, we're discussing a recent exhibition by artist Amelia McSherry. After the break, we'll hear more from attendees as they share their thoughts and reflections on the exhibition.
Think of all the hugs you still have to give, the memories you'll make, and the stories you still have to share. A breast screen can find cancer early when it's easiest to treat, so you can be there when it matters most. It's free, 10 minutes, and always with the woman radiographer. Book your appointment today at breastscreen.org.au or call 132050, because it's time to screen.
A 3CR supporter.
Welcome back to Brainwaves on 3CR. We're continuing our discussion on the recent exhibition by artist Amelia McSherry, and we'll hear more reflections from people who attended the exhibition.
I guess for you, what has the art communicated this evening?
I think what it's communicated to me is the importance of bringing the themes that Amelia's been exploring into public view, quite literally. So people are walking past the exhibition and walking past and sort of quite respectfully curious, I think. Well, my first experience was of someone walking past was a young person who kind of, was holding his hand up to his neck, sort of like, you know, like cutting his throat, like, you know, this is not the space to be having this. And it, you know, it was a young man of kind of 18. I thought, oh, that's really an interesting response. This isn't something that is out in the open in your circumstance, in your context. That's what it made me think, that these conversations have really been swept under the carpet. And then it was really heartening to see an older, maybe someone in their 70s, walk past. And, you know, I don't know, I really got the sense that he was curious in a respectful way about what was going on. He was kind of having a look at the Amelia's pamphlet about what it was about and looking in, and it seemed like he was trying to make sense. And I thought, that's so great that someone's walked past and kind of, it seemed like he was reflectfully engaging with what was going on.
So you saw, you sort of witnessed two, just people passing by, yep. Not people that were coming to mm-hmm. look at the art tonight, but yep. you saw two very different responses. You saw curiosity and you saw a young man make a, slitting yep. his own throat gesture. Yes. What do you think elicited that response from the young man?
Yeah.
If you could speculate, yes. what do you think was going on for him?
It was interesting because my immediate response was a bit annoyed, actually. Like, we have the right to have this exhibition, but you're uncomfortable. And who are we privileging in this discomfort? I don't really care about your discomfort. You don't have to look. You can keep walking. And I think for me, what that elicited was exactly, I think, what this exhibition is about, which is putting the shame back on the people who are bringing these topics up. And I thought, interesting, we could talk forever about, the Andrew Tates of, all the young men who were sort of going into that horrible void of misogyny. But for that, it really elicited this, tut, tut, you shouldn't be doing that. I don't want to be part of that. And this is not, this is not something I want to be a part of. So, I much preferred the older man's curiosity of leaning in and what's this about and is there something I can learn?
The young man seemed to be more uncomfortable. Do yes. you think that has to much to do with the sort of the rising...
The manosphere.
Do you think that has something to do with the manosphere?
100%, 100%. Mm. And sorry, the point I was going to make before was about, that for particularly women who have been... Mm. victim survivors of violence, sexual violence, abuse, men are the best allies. Like when men get up and use their voice and their platform, that is really powerful. We could speculate all sorts of things. Like, I guess just to tell you a personal story, my mum died when I was 8 and my dad, I don't think, had the emotional sophistication or skills to deal with that. And so he then married my stepmom and they were in a relationship, but it was so volatile and really there was domestic violence. It, even though we didn't really have a word around that and I wouldn't have thought about that, I didn't have any of that language, but I think that inability for men particularly to work through emotions has to have something to do with it. And as a middle-aged woman, I go to all sorts of different spaces, creative spaces, writing workshops, art programs, and I think, where are all the men? There are never any men. And so it makes me just wonder, and some of them are wonderful. They're looking after the children at home and, allowing their partners to come into spaces and be creative. But I also just wonder at how men, generally speaking, are working through emotions, socialising, developing skills to communicate, essentially. And it's really something that I've observed lately in the last year. Where are all the men connecting with other humans and talking about their emotions? And I think the manosphere, my analysis of that, is an extension that men, are potentially cordoned off from their emotions. Well, when I was growing up in the 70s and the 80s, things around domestic violence didn't even particularly have a name, and abuse. And I just think it it's a way of almost normalizing this. And that was absolutely something that did not exist in my day. There wasn't the language. I was just talking to my mum. In fact, she probably would have said something but was a bit shy. But when she was growing up in Brighton, there were what was called peeping Toms. And peeping Toms were people who were, who were violating young people's spaces by, being sexual in front of them. And the fact that we called them peeping Toms, which is such a soft sort of euphemistic word, is horrible. And I think that we didn't have the language or the skills to actually highlight how damaging that was.
What do you feel that the art is communicating tonight?
Do you want to go first?
What do I feel the art is communicating tonight? I feel like it's, I guess, a document of Amelia's journey and Amelia's, like, what Amelia's gone through, and giving voice to those who have gone through, like, domestic violence and sexual violence, and creating a space where it can be spoken about and, like, almost witnessed as well, because a lot of these things, like, are always behind closed doors. And so Amelia is, like, opening those doors and allowing us all in, which can be, like, quite uncomfortable, quite confronting, but ultimately, like, really beautiful and special.
Yeah, would you be able to describe for our listeners in what way it is opening the door, like, just in the way that the art is presented tonight?
Yeah, I mean, Amelia is, like, the artist is in a glass box in the middle of the gallery space, and she's just laying there. She has, like, nothing but just a thong on, her dark, like, messy hair, long uncut nails, and is very just, like, raw, and, like, that she's like, this is me, like, I've spent my life in this glass box. And yeah, just, like, allowing, like, there's also a journal piece as well that you can read through, and you can read through her journal during this period that she was, like, in a relationship with someone who was abusing her, and just, like, you can literally, like, open her book and, like, flick through her life in pages, which is, like, so vulnerable. Like, it's not anything that you're, like, allowed to see a lot of the time. Like, people keep their diaries, like, under their beds, in their drawers, closed away, and, like, she's just, like, sitting in a glass box out in the open with her diary open on display.
It's her physical diary. Sorry, I'm chiming in. I thought it would be, like, photocopied or something, but it's actually, the pages are, like, quite raw. She's obviously glued them, stuck them down. It's, like, her actual physical diary, and I was sort of surprised by that. I thought that maybe it would be photocopied, so it's actually quite beautiful how open and raw everything is. I agree.
What I'm feeling from the exhibition tonight is, like, a strong sense of eco-feminism, and, like, the vulnerability that is innate with femininity in correlation to nature, and how when you make an offense or, like, an assault towards women, you are also assaulting nature, you know, because women naturally are such nurturing creatures, you know. So what interrupts nature the most, that would be capitalism, and to me, capitalism is, like, symbolized every day in, like, phallic-centric architecture, such as our massive skyscrapers, bringing it back to capitalism, being, you know, the dogmatic structure that's, like, oppressing everyone, including feminine figures and nature. Yeah.
You mentioned capitalism being sort of the dominant, I suppose, economic ideology at the moment. Do you feel that capitalism impacts the way that men, who are obviously the highest proportion of offenders, do you feel that capitalism influences their behaviour at all?
How
do you feel that that might be the case?
Yeah, for sure. Well, because I think people of a patriarchal nature, you know, they are the ones who contribute to capitalism the most, because these masculine figures, they believe in domination and conquering, which then could lead into things like colonization or whatever. To speak from my personal experience, like, I've dated a business guy before, and that the angle that I went into that relationship was just to be open-minded and experiment a little bit, because I was like, oh, you know, dating a business bro shouldn't be that big of a deal, like, he's a person just like me. But then when we would talk about the nitty-gritty stuff, like, even just, like, entry-level feminist topics, he was so personally affronted by that because he had such a domineering personality and ego, and being in like the business industry really helped coincide with that. And one of the quotes that he gave me was, "I don't want to lose my masculinity and stuff." And I'm like, oh, okay, that's fine. Like, he's been obviously been chastised in the past from previous partners for being a bit effeminate in ways. But like, really, if he had let that, you know, effeminate nature flow a bit more in him, maybe he would be able to get a girl and have a stable relationship, you know? Because it was that rejection of anything like feminine or like any gentle traits that I tried to facilitate with him, he would reject, and that would end up in him verbally abusing me and stuff. And I'm like, that's so normal for him, being verbally abusive, because that's what business bros do. They just spend their day staring at the computer, yelling at stocks and ChatGPT.
Do you feel that some of the masculine traits that he had, was it performative in some way? Because you mentioned that you speculated that he may have expressed some what you would describe as, you know, feminine sort of traits. Do you feel that there was some point where that in his life he was sort of diverted from being able to express that part of himself?
Yeah, absolutely. No, yeah, because I feel like he was definitely inhibited in so many ways, and I just wanted, being the nurturing maternal figure that I am as a Cancer in the star signs, astrology, like, yeah, I really wanted him to just open up and accept his past memoir. Because he was a quote-unquote business bro, he ended up being in he got like this tunnel vision whenever I spoke to him, because any new concepts that I would introduce to him that regarded a post-human thought from like Donna Haraway's lens, he would just reject that because it contradicted everything he was taught in like high school and in business school. Yeah.
So he found it very difficult to look at life outside of the lens of what is good for business and what isn't good for business.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, just super black and white, and, you know, trying to even just really thoroughly describe to him about like what nuance is in different contexts, and, you know, that actually grayscale exists when you're analyzing a situation, including in business. He was just like, no, there's only facts, and it's just, yeah, all that black and white thinking. And it's just like, yeah, but you're kind of forgetting that there are outliers sometimes in your data that you need to consider, you know? Mm. Yeah.
What part of the exhibition has spoken to you and drawn you in and sort of made you think tonight?
I really like Amelia's performance art. First and foremost, like, besides the little baggy canvas grid she articulated and curated, I really love the plastic rectangular prism she's put herself in for the evening, with the grass sprouting out, and then, you know, it kind of just like invites voyeurism in a very like natural, comfortable way, unlike what I've seen in the past at different exhibitions or like performance pieces involving nudity, feminine nudity, like that. It's like the male gaze, it's not there. It's not about the male gaze at all. We're not feeding into that machine. We're talking about women in nature and women's like labor synthesizing nature, you know, with the grassroots on the top. And yeah, then there's like, if you look closer in the grassroots floating above the box, there's like a piece of burnt sage already there. So it's kind of like talking about like cleansing, I suppose, the area before getting rid of negative energy. So this woman can just exist in this singular box, this little plastic coffin that's her designated safe space for the evening. Yeah.
And how do you feel that when you make your way home tonight after experiencing the exhibit, what feelings do you think you'll be experiencing?
I feel quite empowered. Like, to me, it's kind of like very Hayao Miyazaki, eco-feminist, you know, it's like women, purity, nature. So I'm just going to go on the tram feeling very tranquil tonight, thinking about how brave Emilia was today and how respectful the audience was of her space and her work. And it's just good to see such art being made in this current political climate, you know, very important. You, just like the title of the event says it all, yeah.
And when you both leave the gallery space tonight, how do you think you'll both feel on your way, on your journeys home?
Maybe like contemplative, like very thoughtful, like I guess. Yeah. It was very thought-provoking.
Yes.
And very like, I don't know, I think it's a really good thing to talk about, but it is quite uncomfortable and it is quite, like, it does bring up a lot of things for a lot of people. And, yeah, I don't know, it's...
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I feel proud of her. I think this is a shedding for her, for sure. Mm. And it's really interesting to look at these parts of her life that she's kept. Like, one of the parts of the gallery is a bunch of different little objects that I just would never think she would have kept, like birthday candles or glass, and I don't know, I've just been, that's the part that I keep being drawn back to. And I just think that that's quite moving in its own way, and I feel like it would be a shedding for her, for sure. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. Absolutely. When I interviewed Emilia recently, they mentioned that this recovery process is about liberation.
Yeah.
Rather than healing. So do you feel that Emilia, having done this exhibition and put it together, do you feel that this might result in the liberation that we're looking for? While they were conceiving it and putting it together?
I think so. I definitely think things. And I wonder if maybe sitting in that clear box, we were talking about it earlier, like, what is she thinking about? And I said, I think she's probably just hearing everyone's, like, love, support around her, but she's in this little box. So I think it could be liberating in that way, for sure. She can't talk to any of us, but she can listen to us. Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed hearing the reflections of some of the attendees of I Want to Die But Not at the Hands of a Man. In the next part of this podcast, you'll hear an interview with the artist behind the exhibition, Emilia McSherry, recorded shortly after I attended the show. We discuss Emilia's first endurance performance, what the experience was like, and how life has been since the exhibition. We hope you enjoy the conversation. So, yeah, hello again, Emilia. It's lovely to have you back on Brainwaves with us.
Thank you so much, Mark. Lovely to speak to you again.
So, first of all, for our listeners who may have missed your first interview with Brainwaves, could you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your practice as an artist?
Of course. My name is Emilia McSherry. I am a visual and conceptual artist, but in recent years, I've been working more on performance art, and a lot of my work, including this exhibition, is focused and centered around my life experience, but also my experience as a victim and survivor of domestic abuse and sexual violence.
Your exhibition, I Want to Die But Not at the Hands of a Man, it's centered around a lot of attendees that I spoke to described it as being a pretty powerful piece. Could you give our listeners a brief overview of both the exhibition and the performance itself?
Of course. So the exhibition, it was in this beautiful space, these massive big glass windows, so you could see in from the street, and like, you can essentially, as soon as you're walking up, you could see the performance piece, which is me in the center of the exhibition space in this glass box that I had constructed. And out of the top of the glass box were all these different plants and grass and moss growing that I'd gathered from local creeks, which I did put back afterwards. And the performance piece inside the box was me completely naked. I was wearing underwear, but long hair just obscuring my nipples and vagina and long nails. And it was just a durational performance piece where I sat inside that box whilst all the attendees came in and out for 4 hours or so. And surrounding that were maybe six other works, one of which I think was the most popular at the exhibition, was my diary, or entries from my diary from the past 3 years.
And during the endurance piece, what kind of things were you thinking about at the time, you know, and what were you feeling emotionally and, you know, perhaps physically?
I was actually having the time of my life. I can't lie. It was this really dark, strange, you know, liberating all sorts of things, this exhibition. But being in there, I was in this state, which I felt like maybe I was acting a little bit, because I was very purposefully looking introspective. I wasn't smiling. I was keeping like a very serious face. And, you know, I was trying to portray the version of myself that I was throughout my relationship where I experienced domestic violence. But inside, I was actually just thinking about all the people around me. And I was eavesdropping a little bit too, because the glass box wasn't soundproof, so I could hear some conversations. But physically, I was cold. It got like freezing cold towards the end, and I was practically naked. But yeah, the experience was so many people who I knew had asked me before or after, like, are you nervous? And, oh, you're going to be in there with, what are you going to be thinking about? Or what were you thinking about the whole time? And I was like, really? Just having all my nice, peaceful, cool thoughts and watching everybody surround me and wondering what everyone else was thinking, really. That was the main thing.
And, how did you mentioned that some of the responses you've gotten to your work, but, how did the attendees respond to the work? And did anyone interact with you directly during the performance in any ways that were particularly marking for you and stayed with you?
How did people respond to the work? Okay. I was shocked, overjoyed, thrilled at how many people attended the event, because I tried as hard as I could to do some advertising, but I'm not the best at it. I had, you know, a few publications advertise for me or encourage other people to attend my event, but I was shocked and thrilled at the amount of people that came, the amount of people that stayed, and also a lot of people passing through that I'd never seen before, which made me really happy to see that it reached an audience outside of, you know, my lovely friends and family who want to support me. I was also shocked but really happy to see people, a lot of people engaging with the diary were really visibly emotional, but not necessarily distressed. I mean, this is just my perspective, but I could hear, you know, fragments of conversations from inside the box, and a lot of people were just really moved by the work, by the diary entries. They related to it. I could hear as well so many conversations about people's personal experiences with domestic violence or sexual abuse. And yeah, all of that made me feel really grateful, because it just felt like this kind of like this intense topic, but it was a really calm and welcoming and inviting space where I think people just had the freedom to talk about these topics without, you know, worrying about the things they might worry about on a daily basis of like, is this appropriate to bring up? Am I trauma dumping? Is this too much? No, I heard people and I felt people and I saw people being really emotionally impacted. And yeah, that made me really happy. People interacting with me, there were a few people who tapped the glass or came up to me, more strangers than anything. I think that all my, like, you know, people who I knew who attended the event, they were kind of respectful. There were a few people who came maybe off the street. It was a ticketed event, but also like no one was checking tickets. So there were, you know what? I think that everyone who tapped the glass was a man. I can't lie. There was like two men off the street who like had a beer and tapped on the glass. And I was just trying to keep the same look in my eye and not be distracted. But yeah, it was interesting.
Since completing the exhibition, how have you been reflecting on your experiences of domestic abuse and, you know, both emotionally and personally?
I think that I've been feeling so grateful and liberated and thankful for all the support, everyone who came, as I mentioned, like feeling so like loved and so much allyship from the people who I know, who, you know, might have known me when I was going through or like healing from these experiences. Seeing them show up made me feel really, really loved. But then also people that I didn't know, yeah, people checking in on me, giving feedback, reviews, everything. I felt really, really good since the exhibition. Yeah, I felt great about it, actually. And in terms of how I feel about my personal experiences with domestic abuse, I feel really thankful that I had this opportunity and like confidence in myself to publicize my story, to share it with the world. And also I like really thankful that I feel like, you know, not that people are asking me to represent them, but I have had a lot of people who have reached out to me either via message or in real life saying they've also experienced these things and they felt like they would never have, you know, the courage to share those types of things, but they felt really, really grateful that I did and really supported by all the people who supported me and supported everyone.
In our previous interview, you mentioned hoping the performance might bring a sense of liberation. Do you feel you found that liberation by the end of the work?
Definitely. I think something that really struck me as well were that two of my closest friends and my mother, they arrived at the start of the exhibition and they stayed throughout the entire thing. And I didn't ask anyone to stay, and I didn't expect, I really thought people would just come in and pop out. Cause you know, it's like this in very vulnerable, potentially intense or triggering subject matter, but I was surprised how many people stayed for hours. But also, yeah, that in particular really touched me because I felt like it was representative of how these people have been supports for me throughout my life. Just sticking through that whole journey, that whole time, the whole endurance piece, I was thrilled coming out of it to see those people there for me, like they've always been there for me.
One attendee I spoke to during the exhibition raised the idea of allyship from men. Do you feel men have a role to play as allies in these conversations? And do you think their presence in these spaces is important at all?
100%. I think it is so deeply crucial and important. I think advocating for any community that you're not a part of but you care about is like one of the most crucial things to, yeah, being a good human. I felt really grateful for the men who attended, especially there were a few men who were with their, you know, counterparts, like presumably girlfriends or partners. And yeah, I felt really, I think it's crucial for men to have these conversations, support their female friends. I mean, you know, anyone of any gender can be a victim or a survivor of domestic violence or abuse, but statistically speaking, women, you know, are the main victims and men are the main perpetrators. So I think that it's crucial that men are there showing up and speaking about these injustices. And yeah, I felt really, really good about the men who came, and I can only hope that they continue to be awesome, lovely, supportive people.
So the same attendee who described herself as a middle-aged woman spoke about attending art and writing spaces and noticing very few men also sharing these environments. Why do you think there can sometimes be a stigma around men participating in creative or emotionally expressive spaces?
That is a really good observation and a really good question. I think that men, particularly cis straight men, are socialized to suppress emotion and vulnerability. And I think that, unfortunately, this can often correlate to men avoiding self-expression in creative spaces. And I think it's, you know, a lot more culturally acceptable for men to express emotions through anger. And that's why maybe men could be drawn to something like contact sport. But visual art, I think for the most part, like, you know, painting are viewed as vulnerable, delicate, almost feminine forms of self-expression. But I think that self-expression and introspection are crucial parts of not only being human, but being able to interact with the world, to understand yourself and ultimately understand other people and care about other people. And I think that conditioning men to avoid these tricky emotions or conversations, I think that that's ultimately what can push men to self-isolation. And, you know, men being self-isolated is going to affect everyone, including themselves, negatively.
Do you think art and other expressive communities can help give men the emotional tools or insight to express themselves in healthier, less harmful ways?
100%. And I really hope and encourage, yeah, that men get involved with creative self-expression. I think that it's so important for every single human being, but yes, specifically men, of course, if they've been, I mean, you know, societally conditioned to be less vulnerable or be more closed up. I think that finding any means to express yourself is, yeah, it's so crucial to just being human.
Another discussion touched on the language society uses around violence against women. For example, softer euphemisms. One that was mentioned was a peeping Tom, which can downplay the seriousness of violating behavior. Do you think we're in a better place now than previous generations were growing up when it comes to recognizing and addressing these violations and personal boundaries?
Definitely. I think right now we're in a really interesting space when it comes to identifying abusive behavior and language. And I think for the most part, people are becoming more aware and more comfortable standing up for themselves and what they believe in and calling out abusive behavior. And I am, like, I'm really thrilled to see classroom conversations around consent, you know, starting at a very young age, teaching people what is and isn't appropriate. And I, you know, there's undoubtedly been this massive shift over the last 20 years where people are finally feeling, or more people are feeling more comfortable labeling abuse as abuse. And so I can only hope this continues. But then ultimately, I think the most important thing is that when victims or survivors speak up and, you know, they feel comfortable sharing that, that everyone or anyone supports them. I think that's, yeah, that's the biggest and scariest thing about sharing your story, is that fear that people won't believe you or won't support you. So I think, and once again, that's the importance of men and everyone being an ally, just saying, I believe you, I support you. It's that simple.
Many attendees spoke about the importance and power of bringing these conversations in the open rather than keeping them hidden. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, it's imperative that we continue to have these conversations and ensuring that everybody is, you know, comfortable making sure there's a trigger warning if need be, or responding appropriately if someone says, no, I don't want to have this conversation. But when it is a safe space, I think talking about these things that have historically been kept in the shadows is something that we need to continue to do, so people feel safe and comfortable identifying this behavior, but also understanding that they're not alone and that there is support and help and love and understanding.
And beyond art exhibitions like the one that you developed, what other ways do you think people can bring these hidden aspects of life and trauma into public conversations safely and meaningfully?
A friend of mine who was one of the attendees of my exhibition, who is also, she's a survivor of childhood domestic abuse, and she very recently shared her story online and encouraged people to donate to the Center for Nonviolence. And she shared with me personally that attending my exhibition was one of the catalysts that allowed her to feel that encouragement to share her story. And yeah, I think that's, yeah, just that in itself is so incredible and amazing. And something as simple as sharing that on your personal social media, like, you don't necessarily need this massive reach, but if you feel confident enough to tell people something that you've been through, I think that that's really important. And I really hope that, well, I believe that it would have been very empowering as another survivor attending that room, that exhibition space, to see all these people who are showing up, not just for myself as the artist, but also for all survivors of domestic abuse. But yeah, I think having these conversations with people you're close with, respectfully checking in with them, sharing these details about your life and your experiences are incredibly important and liberating. And just the same sentiment, but when you see those around you who love and support you and understand you, that's life-changing.
One attendee described violence against women as in some ways an attack on nature itself. What are your thoughts on that perspective? And for you personally, what relationship do women share with the natural world, if any?
I think that's a really interesting perspective that I haven't really thought about in depth, but I do agree with it. I mean, I think, obviously, to quickly note that women aren't the only people who can give birth and that not all women will give birth, but most of us were brought into this world by a woman and a mother, and what's more natural than that? I think exhibiting violence and aggression towards women is one of the closest things to destroying like a creator of life, which I view very on par with the natural world, nature. I love nature, but yeah, I don't know. I haven't thought about it more, and maybe I will think about it more.
The same attendee also connected capitalism with ideas of domination and control. What are your thoughts on that connection?
Yeah, we definitely live in a capitalist society and a patriarchal society, and I think ultimately capitalism is all about control. Controls our resources, our finances, our labor, our lives. We're dependent on it. So yeah, I definitely agree with that sentiment for sure.
One attendee shared a story about being in a relationship with a man she tried to introduce to what she described as entry-level feminist ideas, while also encouraging him to express softer or more vulnerable traits. But he resisted quite strongly. Have you encountered similar experiences with any of the men in your life?
I can't lie. I try as hard as I can to vet the men who are in my life because of negative experiences I've had in the past. So yeah, no, I've never experienced something like that. It's, you know, when I actively used to date men, it was something that I would bring up on the first date, like, do you consider yourself a feminist? And if they didn't, I wouldn't be interested. But that's not to say that anything really, because the experiences that I had with men who, some of them were truly, truly awful, it was like they got close to me under the guise that they really did care and love and respect women. So yeah, that it's complicated, but I'm aware of that sentiment because I have interacted with men before who, yeah, don't think there's a need for feminism, or they're like, women can vote. Like, what else do you want? But I try to stay away from those types of people.
Yeah. I'm wondering, since you actively had a vetting process when you were dating men, it sounds like some men were able to present themselves a certain way to be palatable to yourself or other people that they might be dating. Having more experience since when you were dating back then, do you feel that you have other tools to be able to filter out the people who might be, you know, putting on a front of awareness around feminist topics or other issues relating to women?
It's actually crazy because I feel like
I have to be so strict with myself now. You know, like, I still have attraction towards men, but over the last, like, year and a half, like, I've also always liked women. So I'm just actively dating women. And then when it comes to men, like, my family and all my friends are so protective of me now that they know what I've been through. So that's a vetting process that's definitely in place, where I can't imagine ever, like, bringing home a man without them being, yeah, like, thoroughly interrogated. But I guess the whole point is that, and this was the point of the, you know, my partner who was abusive towards me, my whole family loved him. Like, it's just a thing that can totally exist only behind closed doors. So unfortunately, vetting someone is only going to get you so far. I think that's just why it's so important. If you haven't experienced anything like this and you happen to be listening to this interview, to look out for just little red flags or signs and trust your gut. I think that was a massive thing that I neglected to do, where early on with this person, I did have these like feelings in my stomach, like, that doesn't feel right. That feels controlling. I'm being a little bit isolated. But it was kind of like, oh, well, this person says they love me, and, you know, love's sometimes difficult and uncomfortable. So I really overlooked these feelings inside to kind of, yeah, try to keep the peace. And women historically are told that, you know, loving a man, marrying a man is like such an awesome achievement. So I was kind of like, oh, I'm just going to go down this path. But yeah, in retrospect, and then also, yeah, looking forward, you can only vet someone so far, but trusting my gut is the biggest thing that I feel like has kept these negative people out of my life.
Mm. Do you think that, you know, younger women who are out there that are, you know, might be just starting to date, do you feel that some of the lessons that you've learned and other people have learned can transfer to younger people? Or, you know, besides, you know, really encouraging them to trust their gut, their instincts, when something feels off, it's worth maybe talking to somebody about it? Or what would they do with that? Those initial feelings, would they keep it to themselves? Or
that is such a great question. I think that for younger generations, honestly, the digital age is like revolutionizing conversations surrounding all these topics of intimate partner violence and these red flags. Like, I'm an avid TikTok user, even though I'm in like my mid-20s. But I know that young women, especially like heterosexual or, you know, bisexual women who are interested in dating men, they're on TikTok too. And they're seeing other women share their stories and their experiences and what to look out for. I think that that's all probably really crucial and really helpful. But yeah, I think the suggestion or what you brought up about talking to people, massive. Yeah. Talk to people you can trust, get feedback. I think that's another weird kind of nebulous, maybe like illusionary, I don't know, a thought, I don't know which word to use, but I think that that is another thought which is very common, where people say like, oh, you keep these, like, if you're fighting with your partner, you keep it to yourself, you work it out to yourself, like, no one needs to hear everything we're going through. Like, no, I'm gonna tell my best friend everything that's going on behind closed doors, because she's gonna look out for me. But you know what it is too, I think that you should really be able to tell like your friends or your family, whoever you trust, as much as you feel comfortable, like, you know, not sharing someone's intimate secrets that they've told you, but like things about your partner, about fights that you've gotten into. And ultimately that's not gonna, like, that shouldn't change their perspective on that person. Like, it's like, yeah, everybody fights with their partner. Like, everybody has disagreements and arguments, but if you're telling them something and they're responding like, oh, you need to run, then it's like, oh, okay, like, yeah. And I think it's easy to build up over time too. Like, lots of little things start happening and you want to preserve your idea or other people's ideas of your relationship. Mm.
Now that I Want to Die But Not at the Hands of a Man has concluded, where do you feel yourself gravitating artistically?
Yes, okay. I really want to work on more fun and silly things. Obviously, those experiences are always going to be a part of who I am, and it's not to say I'll never revisit them, but for now, I feel like that exhibition was very thorough. I shared every aspect of who I am and my story, and I feel really liberated. I feel really happy. I feel really supported. And now I am actively working on, yeah, fun, silly things. I'm working on a project right now called Novelty Life, which explores niche subcultures. It's a photography series, but also some ceramics, but it's really just silly, fun, you know, like dress up styling, brighter colors. So I think that's going to be really awesome to focus on that for a little bit and just have fun making creative things.
Having completed your first endurance performance, do you imagine incorporating similar works into future exhibitions?
Definitely. I have so many ideas in my mind about other endurance pieces that I would really love to put on and explore. And I think that I'm really good at staying in one space for a really long time, staying still, doing repetitive movements. I think it's, yeah, something that I have a lot of experience in, living with chronic illness or, yeah, mental health issues. I do have a lot of experience with, yeah, repetition and staying in my room for a really long time, which they're not the endurance pieces, but I think endurance art is really interesting and cool, and I'm excited to explore more.
Outside your art practice, what activities, supports, or forms of self-care are helping you to, yeah, stay well at the moment? And have you introduced anything new since our last conversation?
I love going into nature. I've always loved that. The new thing that I'm doing is getting out of the country, getting out of Australia for a little bit. And I don't know if that's anything to do with my art practice or more to do with, well, actually, if my life is like an endurance piece, then that's kind of having a break from it all, because I did just quit my job, which has been really awesome, but I'm ready to just explore and make, like, fully focus on art, even though my job was teaching art, but still, I'll be making my own.
And finally, where can our listeners go to find out more about you and any upcoming art exhibitions that you'll be taking part in?
They can go find me on Instagram. My tag or my handle is sorry, but with a zero. So it's S0RRY.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for, joining us at Brainwaves again. And I personally feel very privileged for you to, come back again to sort of talk about, what things have been like for you since the exhibition. I really appreciate you inviting me along to attend as well.
Thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate you attending. You did interview some people, some that I didn't know, some that I did know, but everybody said you had awesome vibes. So just putting that out there.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Brainwaves. You can find more of our shows at the 3CR website, 3cr.org.au, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to send us feedback or suggestions for shows via email at brainwaves@wellways.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next Wednesday at 5 p.m. for another episode of Brainwaves on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.